podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello, so we're back on a week of great victory for Cun Capsners, but a week of introspection for others. Their calls are proven as wrong as a broadsheet journalist baiting clicks. Elsewhere, Richarlison and Maddison showed their worth at 6.5, whereas Jota found himself binned by many. To talk about this and other things, including someone's wild card being pulled, I wonder who that could be, I'm joined today by Nick. How you doing, mate?
All good, thank you, Tom. Just finished watching the Liverpool game. We're recording immediately afterwards, so the bonus points are still being calculated. But I guess I would say medium about the outcome. It's a bit of an interesting one. We'll talk about it in a little while, but just to say who we are Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL and online at whogottheassist.com, as well as every podcasting platform out there. So like, subscribe and retweet and tell your friends if you like what you hear. And apologies again if you were listening via Spotify last week. There were a few issues in terms of getting the podcast live on Spotify. Hopefully it's now resolved for this game week. So Tom, what are we talking about this week?
We've got two things we're focusing on this week. The first is the 6.5-ish price bracket. The emerging value in there is probably the story that's going to run for a little while. We've got a combination of current and past stats. Look at that, plus our own judgments tell us what's going on. I've also wildcarded, as some of you may know, and so I think we may talk about that a little bit too, and you can enjoy some schadenfreude and Nick. And we're going to talk about kind of when the right conditions may be to press that panic button. We'll then do the features, the market forces, a much lighter looking zombie league after my ban session today, and the All England 11 before taking some questions as usual at the end.
Yeah, sounds great, Tom. Anyway, shall we get over and done with? How was your game week?
It wasn't that great. I think I've kind of come out at 51, which has added a little layer of respectability to get into the 50s. However, you know, we'll talk about this in a little bit, but I've got to admit defeat on a few things. I mean, principally, I've got to admit defeat on the idea that I can cover Kun Aguero in this run of fixtures with the idea that I have, which was to have Bilva, Mahrez and Aubameyang, also all three of them kind of covering. Being 40 points down, obviously, on a lot of informed managers, and then being 20 down on managers like yourself, who captain Salah as well, is a pretty untenable position to be in. So, unfortunately, I've had to pull the wild card as a kind of a defensive measure. We'll talk about that in a little while. But yeah, not the best of weeks for me. Made a little bit better tonight, but it could have been, you know, it could have been better, obviously. What about you, Nick? How did you do?
Yeah, so I scored about 68 points, which I guess is kind of a middling score again, above the average, but not very high above the average, below the top 10k average, I think. And it looks like it's possibly a red arrow for me as well, but it's still being calculated. Yeah, as I said about the Liverpool game, I think the last minute Mane goal, we got an assist out of it for our Salah. So that kind of, you know, like you said, added a you know, a little bit of respectability to his score. He got 18 for the captainers, so 9 in total for the non-captainers. But when you compare that to the haul that Aguero got, which was 20 points, and I was coming umming and ahhing about captaining him as well. You know, a few people out there suggested he might not start. We're not going to name any names, but there was a certain person in his speaker box. Kind of was tempted when they said Zanka wasn't going to play because Huddersfield looked particularly weak without him, but ended up captaining Salah. You know, Mendy played really well, kind of deserved a hat-trick of assists, only got 2 assists and 8 points, which is quite a decent return. Obviously, having Aguero was great, 20 points, and Arnautovic got 8 for me. I felt a little bit hard done by Sigurdsson and Ben Davis, as their underlying stats were absolutely brilliant this game week, and they set up a number of chances for their teammates who couldn't score them. Also got the Robertson clean sheet, but other than that, you know, Mahrez, Jota, Van Aanholt, Patricio all blanking as well, means it was kind of an average game week for me.
Yeah, probably not panic stations for you quite yet. So you mentioned Jota in there, and I think that this is kind of the first thing to talk about this week. The 6.5 value bracket is something we've spoken about a lot in pre-season in terms of the talisman. To some extent, you need a golden calculator to define how well a talisman is going to do throughout the course of the season, because obviously you need to be swapping them in and out to cover like the high value asset and what they might potentially output. However, again, the 6.5 player, definitely worth looking at. Jota was the man, obviously, we pegged pre-season, Nick, as being the punt to go with and the man to do it, top scorer for Wolves last season, and a pretty high rate of accuracy, actually, compared to James Maddison of 6.5 for Leicester. However, it doesn't appear to have worked out. Jota, the last two games, has created one chance and taken one shot. And rightfully so, a lot of people have sold him. And, you know, I sold him before I wildcarded for Richarlison. And I think a lot of people are now looking at that and thinking, you know what? Well, probably Richarlison is where you might go, but... Who have you been looking at in this bracket, Nick, and who's particularly caught your eye?
Well, I mean, we did a pre-season article, didn't we, on the 6.5 million midfielders, the crowded house, as we refer to. And I've got something to confess, actually, Tom. I've actually already done a switch in this position. I follow the crowd, so to speak, and I've swapped out Jota and I've brought in Richarlison. And it's a bit of a risky punt because we have actually looked at the underlying stats on Richarlison. He's far outperforming what he's actually been doing in the league. I mean, he's only had four shots and he's managed to score three of his four shots, which is pretty impressive. So the guys who owned him have done pretty well out of him, all things considered. But it's a tough one because last season he was so poor with his shooting. And I think he was the second or the third. He had the second or third most goal attempts last season. So I'm not so certain. I know you mentioned he was doing a kapoo and he potentially was unsustainable. But if he can actually hit that sort of level of goal attempts that he managed last season, and he seems like he's a very young player and he seems like he's been working on his finishing a fair bit over the summer, and we could continue to see hauls from Richarlison. And with Everton's fixtures, I just had, and the price rise as well, I just had to make that move.
No, I absolutely understand. And I probably would have done the same if I hadn't have kind of popped the wild card as it was. No, I think you're right on Richarlison. The thing is with Richarlison is the ownership, right? So the ownership is 30% now on Richarlison. So any goal that he scores is a rank killer for you if you don't own him. And, you know, we've got the fixtures coming up, which are very good for Everton, that were picked up by many people at the start of the season. But Bournemouth, Huddersfield, West Ham, the next three, Arsenal in game week six, which is a little bit of a tougher game, but 7, 8 and 9 again, Fulham, Leicester and Crystal Palace. So that's six fixtures where Richarlison is in with a very good chance of returning. If he does return at 30% ownership, he is going to kill your rank if he scores. That said, the stats, as you've just mentioned, are a little bit interesting, to say the least. Richarlison's XG is 0.92, which means the quality of the shots he's had, he should have scored 0.92 goals by now. He scored three, which means he's got plus 2.08, which is much above the top XG scorer at this point last season, which was Anthony Martial, Nick. He was scoring nine goals last year without anyone realising fame. However, Richarlison, I think, is a bit of a no-brainer call, I'm afraid. We're likely to see a regression. I think that's definitely the case. I'm sure there are a few people who are looking at it thinking, well, he's going to regress, so why should I bring him in? The key is the ownership, and the key as well, as you've just kind of inferred, is the kind of... Yeah, so it's something intangible, isn't it? But I think that there's always that element of form, which means that a player can outperform what the stats that they're posting. It's like the inverse kind of Cedric effect, isn't it? Where Cedric has famously always posted fantastic stats, but the output hasn't really kind of tallied up to it. With Richarlison, it just looks like he's in unconfident form at the moment. He's with Marco Silva, his father figure, and I think that he, you know, at 30% ownership, you've got to really be thinking, yeah, no brainer, and I can see why you brought him in, and he's straight in my wildcard team as well.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, at this stage of the season, we don't want to go too much into the underlying stats because, like we said, it's very early and you can't really notice trends, and it's more pointing out that if a player has brilliant stats in the first couple of game weeks, it's not necessary that they're going to be able to sustain that level of stats for the entire season. I mean, looking at Richarlison last season compared to this season, his minutes per goal last season was actually 565.4 minutes per goal, which is actually pretty poor compared to this season, where it's 57.3 minutes per goal. But last season, his goal attempts was actually higher than it is now. So his goal attempts currently is sitting at 2.0 goal attempts per game compared to 2.5 last season. So he was actually making more attempts on average last season, which kind of underlies the point that you were making there, Tom.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, let's look at some other guys in this bracket then, shall we, Nick? The first one probably actually is a little bit above it. It's Mkhitaryan at 7.0, Nick. And Arsenal, of course, about to embark on, after a tricky couple of first fixtures on a run of fantastic games between game weeks 3 and 10. They had no teams from the top six last season. They're all kind of towards the top of the FDR and towards the top of our ticker. And the last game, obviously, he returned, Mkhitaryan. He's kind of started the season as he did last season to some extent. And it's looking like, for whatever reason, he's having a very good time of it. And, you know, compared to Man United last year, He's posting very similar stats, same number of goal attempts in the first two games, similar number of chances created, although he did create slightly more chances for United, incredibly, over like last year. I think he got four assists in the first two games, didn't he? But Mkhitaryan is in the top three for attempts amongst midfielders with five, one big chance there. And he's also the top for chances created amongst midfielders with seven, and he's created two big chances. That is interesting, especially in the context of the fact that he has just played Manchester City and Chelsea. So 7.0, I think that he could be one to definitely keep an eye on. And if you are looking to kind of, you know, if you've got 0.5 spare and you've sold Jota, or you're thinking of selling Jota, or as part of a, you know, your two FTs, I think that he may well be top of the list right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think with Arsenal's fixtures, they've got a great run coming up. And considering that they've had two really tough fixtures at the beginning of the season, playing two of the best teams, to have the best, like you said, created more chances than any other midfielder with seven and 26 minutes per chance created, that's pretty pretty decent underlying stats. And now the run for Arsenal is looking a lot kinder. You'd like to see, it's quite likely that he's going to start converting more of those chances, or his teammates will, rather, like Sylvain Aubameyang, who unfortunately didn't deliver for you, Tom, but we're not going to talk about that for the moment. But yeah, like you said, yeah, Mkhitaryan, definitely an option, slightly more expensive than the other guys that we're going to talk about. But yeah, definitely someone to keep an eye on for sure.
Absolutely. Moving on to James Maddison, then, Nick, we've seen a lot of hype about him after watching the game. It looks like he's doing a good job of stepping into Riyad Mahrez's shoes as far as the indications go. However, it should probably be pointed out, again, I'm going to lurch towards the XG here, that his XG was actually 0.17. So his goal means that he's massively overperforming that at the moment with plus 0.83 on the delta. We saw in the Prospects and the Prospects, didn't we, that he takes a lot of shots. He tends to take a lot of shots per game, and the accuracy is variable, to say the least. It was below 50% his shot accuracy last season for Norwich. And, you know, Leicester do have Southampton, Liverpool the next two. You may be thinking, well, I'm happy to watch and wait there. And to be honest, that's my view really on that. Between game weeks 5 and 15, though, Leicester only play Arsenal of the top six, and they have a very, very nice run. So the eye should be on players like Maddison, like Pereira, like Vardy. And when people do wildcards, when the mainstream does wildcard around kind of game week 4 and 5, I think that'll probably be when people mostly go for it. I expect to see Leicester to be kind of in many squads, despite the unrest it seems going on with Puel at the moment. What do you make of Maddison, Nick, after seeing him this weekend?
Yeah, I think obviously he's an exciting player to watch, and definitely one to see how he performed. They got Southampton up next, which is a reasonable fixture. Then they've got Liverpool, which is a tougher one. And after that, they've got quite a nice run of Bournemouth, Huddersfield and Newcastle. So it'll be interesting to see how he performs in the next couple of fixtures, and if he is worth the hype, as they say. I mean, his underlying stats, like you mentioned, they're not the most impressive out of all of the 6.5s, even if he is passing the eye test. I mean, he's made 7 crosses, 0 have been successful, which sounds like a throwback to Nyonwatch there. But yeah, no, I think he's definitely one to watch, but not necessarily someone that I would recommend bringing in at this moment in time, considering the other 6.5 million midfielders that are on offer.
14 goals, 8 assists last season for Norwich, and he did have a set-piece monopoly. I don't think he's going to be on penalties for Leicester. That'd probably be Vardy. But you know, if he is taking the set plays, you've got to just hope it kind of goes into Slabhead's face. But I think that this is one that is worth watching and waiting for, rather than kind of jumping into. Pedro, I think, is probably the next one. Like, we trailed him a lot, didn't we, during pre-season? And he, and like Richarlison, is quite a selfish player. Like, what he'll do is take shots whenever he can. He's not really looking to set anyone up, is he? He's looking to score a goal. And you can see that. Like, last season, despite only playing under 2,000 minutes, Pedro managed a shot frequency of a shot every half an hour, which is pretty damn good in terms of the time he's on the field, and kind of shows what he's looking for. Yeah, I guess that the issue with him is that once Hazard's back, where does he fit in? Like, he's risen by 0.1. He's now 6.6. He scored 2 goals in the last 2 games, of course. But are we looking at him, Nick, and thinking, yeah, he's going to be the man who's going to continue on there? Or are we going to see kind of Willian? I guess Hazard's a stick on that Chelsea team. So are we going to see him lose minutes to Willian?
It's a tough question. I think he suits Sarri's model a little bit more than he suited the 5-3-2, because he didn't really feature too much in Conte's plans, but it seems like Sarri likes him and he's starting him week in, week out. He's obviously started the first couple of games really well as well, and he seems on form. He was one of our falling stars as well, because he dropped in price by about 1.5 million this season, and he's really looking pretty good, to be honest. I mean, two goals, obviously, which is great, but he's also got a 24.4 minutes per attempt, so he's getting lots of attempts and goal, and he's creating a few chances as well. I mean, every 57 minutes, so he seems to be working well alongside his teammates this season. I think he's definitely someone to perhaps think about bringing in if you are wild carding like yourself, Tom. I mean, they've got Newcastle, Bournemouth, Cardiff and West Ham, which is a really good run of fixtures for Chelsea, actually, the next four. So I think definitely in terms of Chelsea coverage, he would probably be, he's probably the best out there in terms of attackers right now for if you look at price. So I think he's ahead of Willian as well.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, in terms of attackers, you're probably looking a bit too far up the pitch, aren't you? I mean, you've got Mr. Alonso, don't we? Yeah, I mean, yeah. Again, I mean, obviously indicative. Yeah, again, but there's a familiar face at the top of the attempts for defenders. It's Alonso again who's up top with six, and you mentioned the fantastic underlying stats for Ben Davies. Again, five shots, he's just second. But Alonso, I don't know what happened, really. I just think that, you know, we all kind of thought, well, Sarri's going to try to discipline him. It just sounds like he's just not able to be disciplined, is he? He is still breaking forth those positions. He's still kind of almost as much as Mendy is being in the final third. He has forced his way into our thinking, certainly, hasn't he? I mean, if Pedro 6.6 and Alonso 6.6, surely you buy Alonso. You know, he's had six shots and he's also created three chances, one of those being a big chance as well, which is better than Pedro. He's nailed too. I mean, it feels a bit of a no-brainer to me, despite the fact no one really thought about him pre-season.
I'm a little bit annoyed, really, because I was a bit of a victim, I guess, of the news articles out there and all the talk about how Sarri's not even potentially going to even start him and he's going to be more defensive. Because, I mean, all pre-season, I talked about these attacking wing-backs and how they've got the potential for attacking and defensive returns and how, you know, they're really good. And obviously, I loaded up on left-backs, actually. My entire defence is made up of left-backs with Ben Davies, PVA, Mendy and Robertson. And I forgot the most prolific of all left-backs and decided inexplicably to exclude him from my side, despite the fact he was only 0.5 million more expensive. And, I missed out on the returns that he's got. And now I don't have the budget to actually fit him in, which is a little bit irritating for me, unless I take a minus four. But, yeah, I mean, obviously... Alonso is great. You know, we talked about him a lot last year. He was one of our favourite players to watch all season. You know, he was so prolific with his attempts, and he seems like he's really hit the ground running this season as well. Definitely someone to look at if you are wildcarding. I would be surprised if you didn't bring him in with Chelsea's fixtures. Like I mentioned, they're pretty good. But yeah, with Pedro, I mean, I don't see why you can't double up, to be honest. You know, £13 million on two really attacking Chelsea players. I mean, what's not to like about that?
Absolutely. It just depends on the team structure, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I still probably think that Alonso is probably your man if you're looking to cover Chelsea kind of back and front almost. And, you know, as you just mentioned, they've got Newcastle, Bournemouth and Cardiff. The latter two fixtures are at home. Those are fixtures that FPL managers should be looking at and kind of licking their lips about, I'm afraid. If you don't own any Chelsea players, you should be really looking to get some in pretty soon. I'm sure things will sort themselves out and things will kind of self-right themselves. I mean, there are a few other players here. I mean, there's your man Siggy, there's Walcott, there's Lucas Moura as well, there's Ryan Sessegnon, who got an assist to kind of bring himself back from the brink a little bit. But I mean, is there anything to say about these kind of other guys, these other guys in the picture, or is it really kind of a case of Richarlison, Mickey, Pedro and maybe Alonso kind of dominating the scene?
I mean, there are cases to make for those other players. I think it all comes down to, like, if you're wanting to differentiate from the masses, so to speak. I've still got Gylfi Sigurdsson, so I'm actually doubled up now in the Everton midfield. But I mentioned his stats were actually pretty decent. He created six chances, which was more than any other player this game week. He was really unlucky not to get an assist, actually, which, you know, was bit annoying, but you know, he obviously with Everton's fixtures, I think he definitely will get some attacking returns pretty soon. He's definitely one to watch. Sessegnon, I wouldn't say he's a good idea to get in at the moment. He he's only had, I think he's had a chance every 90 minutes, which isn't great. But then Fulham did have quite a tough fixture this game week, and I think Fulham's fixtures are starting to look a little bit nicer. They've got Burnley up next, and then they've got Brighton, and then they've got, I think, you know, he is an option, but I think with the other options at that price bracket, I wouldn't necessarily go for Sessegnon. He's a little bit unproven in the Premier League.
Yeah, and there's always kind of your man Walcott as well, who at 6.5 seems to be kind of the forgotten guy with Richarlison getting a lot of the love. I mean, Walcott has been weighing in at around the same sort of stats level as Richarlison. So he's created two chances, same as Richarlison. And then he's taken three shots compared to Richarlison's four. And two of his shots have been big chances as well. Which is the same as Richarlison. So, you know, it seems like both those wingers are getting forward. It's just kind of how it's all going to work out with Bernard and things like that. But, you know, there's definitely a lot in that price bracket, and it sounds like Richarlison's kind of the man if you don't own him already. And if you don't own him, I mean, I probably would go for Mkhitaryan, and I will be going for Mkhitaryan on my wild card. Will you be looking at Mickey in time soon, Nick?
I don't know at the moment. I am thinking about an Arsenal player, possibly even a defender like Bellerin as another option. Hasn't hit the ground running this season, but with the decent Arsenal fixtures, I think he's definitely one to watch and probably the best asset in terms of defence. So if I was looking to... ideally, I'd like to upgrade Ben Davis to Alonso, but if I was looking to downgrade, then it would be Bellerin, or I might even just stick with... Ben Davis, seeing that Manchester United conceded three against Brighton, surely he's due an assist now.
Yeah, he's definitely due in some ways. It's just whether he's going to realise that.
Who got the assist?
Right, shall we move on quickly to my wild card then, Nick? So it's an interesting time. Fortunately, I had to kind of go for it despite the cause for optimism last week. For whatever reason, the gamble that I mentioned didn't really pay off, and I was zero for free. I had Aubameyang, I had Bilva, and I had Mahrez, and the three of them didn't score to cover the 40 points that Sergio Aguero created for his captainers, 20 points for non-captainers, that is. I kind of decided to pull the wild card, and I think it's worth kind of talking about that generally. I think, you know, everybody else will be talking about this in a couple of weeks, so it might be worth kind of getting in first a little bit. And the reasons for the wild card pull for me are thus. The first one was getting the player in. I always said, you know, getting a wild card is contingent on one player emerging that I need to buy. This was Kun Aguero, and I probably should have, outfought it a little bit. Any goal from him now is a rank killer. He's going to be the number two owned player. I can't be stubborn about that. I just need to sort it out. To get him in the squad I had, I'd have to donate points, and those are points I simply didn't have to donate. It also mean that I was behind in terms of transfers. So when people are buying in Alonso or something this week or looking to move Richarlison in, I'd be buying players to template up for the week before and cover that week before rather than kind of planning my team forward. And part of that is just accepting my gambles didn't really work out and to just reshape and course correct as early as possible. I think being stubborn and letting the rot to set in wouldn't have been a good idea. I've got to show some bounce back ability, as Ian Dowie would say. So, Nick, after everything that's happened this weekend, do you think I've made the right decision to wildcard, or are you still unsure about what I've done and why I've done it?
Well, I can understand the arguments you're making. I just worry about wildcarding so early means that you're chasing points to a certain extent. Obviously, a lot of people have these players in their team and they've already scored these points. Now you're going to be 50-odd points behind some of these players who have the likes of Aguero, who have the likes of Alonso, Mane, if you're thinking about him as well. And you'll also be missing your wild card. So when suddenly Kane scores a hat-trick and has a great run of fixtures and everyone's wild-carding and bringing Kane in, and Aguero looks like he's being rotated for Jesus after that first six fixtures, you know, hypothetically, and you might feel like you're falling behind them again because they're all wild-carding and you're having to take hits. And, you know, I understand why you've done it, but it is a bit frustrating. We obviously both backed Riyad Mahrez and he hasn't done anything yet. You backed Aubameyang as well, who's not scored any of his chances. But then we always knew that Arsenal had two really tough fixtures at the beginning of the season, and you didn't bring him in for those two fixtures. You brought him in for game week 3-7 for Arsenal as well. So you could have stuck with it, I guess. We'll see. Your team's looking so fresh, so clean. So we'll see how you see how it works out. It might be the best move of the season. Might save your season, as you said.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I probably will keep Aubameyang, actually. I think part of it is basically about coming back swinging with a soon-to-be unaffordable side. So the idea is looking at Aubameyang, looking at Kun, and looking at probably Zaha as the front three. Having three in midfield, probably Mkhitaryan, Salah definitely, and probably Richarlison at the back, having a back four of Mendy, Alonso. It would have been Wan-Bissaka, so probably I'm going to have to end up playing the next Salah, N'Golo Kante, the next game at least, and then probably Ederson in goal, so Ederson, Mendy, and Kun Aguero being my three Man City players. I'm not too happy about playing the defensive wildcard, but I think sometimes you've got to go on, you know, got to play the defensive, if that makes sense, if you're in a position like I'm in. I think sometimes as well, there's a little bit of a wider point to be made here about the nature of advice. We tend to say this a little bit later on in the year, don't we? But I think it might be pertinent to just say quickly now. Remember, sometimes the people are looking at things from their perspective. People do find it quite difficult to step into other people's shoes. So, for example, this week, a few people, I was thinking about it on Sunday night, should I wildcard? People were advising me not to, and I asked them, who's your captain this week? It was Kun Aguero. So it's very hard from their perspective to think about how it would feel if they didn't own that player. And it was coming from very much perspective of, well, I wouldn't wildcard. So, you know, I think that definitely influences people's view. At the moment, it's one of those things where a few boxes have been ticked in terms of the conditions to wildcard, which are you've had a bit of a setback. You need to make changes to your team. You know, I wanted to keep Aubameyang, but also get Kun Aguero in, which is looking like a -8. I don't have those points, and I think that it's definitely kind of worth doing. I definitely know what you mean in terms of, you know, in the future, I'm going to have to probably be a bit more planned about what I do. But nonetheless, I do this most years in terms of wildcarding early. It's kind of, you know, what, maybe 1 or 2 weeks earlier I normally would, but I've got time now. There's no midweek fixtures unless I'm the Burnley owner, which I'm not. There are no real rises around in the IB. They're more around this sort of time, so I can take advantage of those. For example, I'm sitting on Mane at the moment. I may well get 0.2 out of him. It's a half of a 0.1 profit, and it looks like Aubameyang may drop as well. So I've got, you know, a few kind of areas which look like it's going to work out. The key is having that unaffordable side, really, and being able to use that to my advantage going forward. And some of it is, I mean, you mentioned, you know, setting up for last week. I'm trying not to do that and fall into that trap and just chase points with my wild card. Some of it is about kind of balancing hindsight and foresight. And in terms of foresight, you know, having Mickey and Alba in my team is probably where I'm going to go with it, and kind of have those Arsenal fixtures in mind, have space to bring a Leicester player in, have space to bring X, Y, and Z in. It's not ideal, but it is what it is. And, you know, sometimes you just got to take what you're given, really, and deal with the circumstance in front of you. And I think that's kind of the key for me in terms of wildcarding generally. As FPL Connect has said many times, we give you the tools, but it's up to you to decide. In terms of your wildcard, Nick, what are your plans? I mean, do you have any thoughts for it at the moment? What are the conditions that would make you wildcard?
I don't have any plans at the moment. I like to take each game week as they come. I normally tend to wildcard around game week 7, game week 8. Wildcarding around that time last season really paid off for me, actually. That's when I really started to see a big increase in my overall rank. There were a few players really hitting form around that time, as I've said before on other pods. I think it was Sterling for Manchester City was one player that I brought in that was really good at that moment in time. And there's like, I think I brought in Stephen Ward from Burnley, and I think I managed to catch like 0.5 in price rises from him as a few assists for me as well. And he was just a random player that really benefited my team at the time. So I think, yeah, it'll be a wait and see. I can't see myself wildcarding until at least game week 6. So I'll probably keep the core of my team for the next few game weeks. It's tough with players like Riyad Mahrez, because obviously Manchester City have some really great fixtures, but he's not, I mean, the first game I think he came off after 57 minutes. This game he started on the bench and only played about 20 minutes, and it's tough to know what to do with some of these players, especially when you look at the likes of Sadio Mane, who's only 0.5 more expensive. He will start every game for Liverpool. You won't see him sitting on the bench. And he's looking pretty prolific as well. He even somehow managed to get 3 bonus points, even though it's Sadio Mane we're talking about. So it's a tough one. I still want to have 3 Manchester City players for these fixtures as well. So I've gone off on a little bit of a tangent there, talking about Mahrez and Mane. But moving back to wild cards, yeah, I think if I have like an injury crisis, I may be forced to pull the trigger. Or if I have a really poor game week, like you said, you've had a pretty poor game week. It's very early in the season, and maybe this is the impetus you need to sort your team out and get going.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, last year obviously didn't quite pay off because Kun Aguero was an accident in a taxi in Amsterdam. But you know, the year before, I pulled the wild card around this time, and that kind of propelled me up to my final kind of position of just as I was at 20k. Year before that, pulled the wild card around this time as well. Ended up 2k. So you know, things change, and I think that sometimes it's just very much down to the situation in front of you, and it's just about kind of adjusting to what you see in front of you. Okay, let's take a break there, Nick, and move on to the features.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and we're going to do our Market Forces section. This is our section where we use our FPL NTI data to describe the movers and shakes in the transfer market. And Nick's the man across the numbers. What are you seeing this week?
So I guess there's no surprises who's top of the net transfers in this game week. It's firstly, it's Mr. Richarlison. Now, we talked a little bit about him already. He's a popular pick. I've already drafted him in. He's in your wild card. So we're two people that have jumped aboard the Richarlison wagon. We've got on the back of the bus and we've signed him up into our teams. 295,000 managers have transferred him in this game week alone so far, which is no surprise. As you mentioned, Tom, his ownership's now over 30%. Secondly, most transferred in player, surprisingly not first, I guess, is Aguero. He's had over 200,000 transfers in after that brilliant performance against Huddersfield. We've talked about Man City's fixtures as well, which are brilliant. They're playing Wolves up next, but they've also got Cardiff, the likes of Brighton up next, Newcastle as well. So, you know, really good fixture run for Manchester City. And his teammate Benjamin Mendy, who we declared a must own on Twitter, he's third in terms of transfers in. He was absolutely brilliant. He was playing, so Manchester City lined up with five defenders, and he was playing wing back, and he was just creating so many crosses. I was ridiculous the amount of crosses coming from that guy. And he showed some goal threat as well. He should have had three assists, really, but he only got two assists. But that puts him on four assists for the season, which is brilliant for a defender after just two games. So, you know, who knows how many he'll end up on at the same season. He's already had two price rises. He's up to 6.2, but he's still looking like an absolute bargain considering the attacking returns and the defensive returns that he has on offer.
I mean, those three aren't surprising, are they, really? I'm sorry, Richarlison, but I think that Aguero is probably going to be the top guy who comes in for a lot of people this week. We're seeing sales of Jamie Vardy, who got sent off. He's going to miss, I think he's going to miss one game, but over 110,000 people have sold him off now. And interestingly, for my wildcard kind of hopes, 82,000 people have sold Aubameyang ahead of that fantastic run of fixtures. I mean, if you did watch the game, he did obviously sky a very, very easy chance, which seemed a little bit unlike him, but equally it sounds like from Borussia Dortmund fans he's a little bit kind of hot and cold. I'm just kind of hoping he does kind of pop back into form, but equally, you know, people are just making the swap, aren't they, because of the Kun Aguero output and kind of the rage of being without Kun. And I think Mendy, you know, we said at the start of the season, I spoke about him an awful lot. For 6.0, he's actually underpriced. I think he's probably gonna be 6.5/7 next year if he carries on at this rate. Interestingly, in terms of transfers out, we don't really see defenders in the top five, do we? You've got to travel quite a long way down the transfers out list to identify the first defender, who's Otamendi, who's been sold by almost 50,000 people. Walker sold by almost 42,000. Then another Arsenal player, Bellerin, again, been sold by almost 45,000 people now. So quite a lot of different sources for people getting Mendy in. Yeah, kind of Aguero, and yeah, Richarlison as well, been sold. Kevin De Bruyne and Sanchez being sold a lot for him, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so De Bruyne is the most sold player this game week. Over 170,000 transfers out. Obviously, he's injured, so you know, people are getting rid fast, and they're probably freeing up a fair bit of cash as well. So maybe that's you know, funding the moves for the likes of Mendy, the likes of Aguero, and also the likes of Alonso, who's had over 200,000 transfers in as well after that brilliant first couple of games for him. So, yeah, no surprises there. Premium defenders, Alonso and Mendy, being drafted in, the likes of Sanchez, likes of Ericsson's being sold heavily. There's a few people I've seen on Twitter who kind of had to make a decision between Ericsson and Mane, and they picked Ericsson, and they're regretting that decision quite vocally. So Ericsson's had over 80,000 transfers out, and Spurs have Manchester United up next, which is another tough fixture for them.
Yeah, I can imagine there's going to be a real exodus there. To be honest, with Mane, he's not quite in top five yet, but 125,000 transfers in so far. I think we're going to see, after that goal, more people buying Sadio. And I think it's going to be interesting for me as well, because I'm going to make a decision really whether I keep Mane, who I'm going to sit on and hope for a 0.1 out of at least, whether I actually keep him on in my wildcard, whether he ends up going in the end for that Aubameyang plan that I mentioned. But it's quite a difficult one in terms of trying to understand whether he's the one or just the prototype in the team that I've got. Finally, I guess Mkhitaryan, we mentioned him a minute ago, being brought in by almost 150,000 people so far. So 150,000 people have really heard this pod and have acted. But I guess ahead of the fixtures that we're seeing, it's not too surprising to see his ownership bloom, is it? Last season, he was the top home midfielder within the space of 2 game weeks. And it looks like, I don't think it's going to go that way. It looks like it's going to be Richarlison behind Salah for the time being. But 14% ownership he's crept up to now. Beginning to look, good, as you said, a good relationship with Aubameyang from Dortmund. And it looks like he's going to be one that Emery's trusting and is in the team right now and is producing.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely one to watch. Shall we move on?
All right. Let's move on to the Zombie League, Nick. And this is, again, a little bit vexed because we are talking just after the games are finished. But this is where we check on the process of our shambling zombies run by our unspecified family members living at our address, of course. This is our no chips, no transfers, no changes league. Anyone violating this in any way, shape or form will be booted. I'd look through the league this Monday, and I found 75 people, I think it was, in the first three pages who had done something, be it make a transfer, be it play a chip, be it change captaincy, or there are a few sneaky people who moved Wan-Bissaka and Peltier around. So not only have they left the zombie team, they've also got -2 now, which I think is quite nice. There's a few kind of interesting characters in there at the moment. It's worth giving a shout out to Prashant here, who is being done by a zombie, unfortunately. So his zombie team scored 76 points this week. His actual team scored below that, and his actual zombie team is outranking his own team by quite a long way. His zombie team's in the top 100k right now. And I think that's going to be something which happens an awful lot. This week, how did your zombie team itself do?
So I scored 50 points. Maybe if you remove some more people, Tom, I might actually see a green arrow, but it's looking unlikely at the moment. I scored 50 points. So I've got Salah and Kane, who both got returns. My five-man at the back didn't work out too well for me this game week. I got the 8 from Mendy, but Keane, David Luiz, Bailly and Vertonghen all blanks, and I actually had a knockout assist sitting on the bench. So not ideal game week. Nalcevic also got 8 points. But yeah, 50 points in total sees my zombie team sitting currently 585th in the league. How about yourself?
Yeah, fair enough. Mine's got 44. Again, not the best, really. I had Aubameyang captain, bust. De Bruyne injured, so Tom Kearney's off the bench. Duffy scored his first goal ever in the Premier League after sitting atop the goals imminent table that FFS Joe loves so much. He's second on my bench and trapped there because Ashley Young and Ben Mee both play for 1 point. I mean, some of the good points were Pascal Gross getting 10 points, Pereira for Leicester getting another assist, get 12, Azpilicueta with an assist, and Ederson in goal also getting an assist. However, it's probably not looking too good at the moment. I think over the next kind of few game weeks, I'm hoping that Aubameyang shows up and turns it around. But, I've got Jota in there. I've got Eriksen, who I'm hoping will spark in there. I've got Firmino, who was, for all intents and purposes, pretty anonymous in tonight's game in there. It's just kind of a little hope that a few of these players are going to kind of show up and turn it around, because I purposefully kind of spread the wealth, and just for whatever reason, it's not quite worked so far.
Yeah, fair enough. Shall we check up on the All England team as well then? So this is our team that's celebrating the Three Lions achievement at the World Cup. So we're going to be running a team from start to finish with solely English players. So how did they do? I know they transferred in Sterling, which didn't work out for them this game week, did it?
Minus four this week to bring in Walker and Sterling. Neither of them showed up. So off the bench comes Sessegnon with his assist and Charlie Austin for a one-pointer. A goal for Maddison, assist for Ali, a clean sheet for TAA and Morrison, and a goal for Tarko, who stood in a good stead. Harry Kane, their captain, scored a goal. But it's not looking too fantastic for them either. After 52 points and quite a poor start to the season. We might wildcard soon. I'm just not too sure really what to do because we've got, you know, Jamie Vardy is suspended at the moment. If Raheem Sterling and Carl Walker had played, I think we'd be looking at a very different story. It's just the case that they've been kind of victimised by Pep, omitting both of those key players for our All England team. There just needs to be a hope that it's going to kind of improve in the future. But I mean, next week is looking pretty dicey for the All England team as well, with the key men, Harry Kane and Dele Alli, being away at Man United, which isn't particularly good. If Sterling and Walker return, then that's obviously all well and good. But, you know, the captaincy is quite a vexed issue. I may end up actually taking the gamble that Sterling does show up and play away at Wolves. He looks like the most likely captain choice at the moment, with Josh King, Austin, James Maddison and Townsend all having kind of adverse fixtures. So it may be Raheem Sterling who takes the captaincy, and we hope that he kind of comes on and does something in his one game that he's going to get every other game, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess it kind of makes sense to back Sterling. He didn't start the last game, but you'd like to think that he's going to get a go against Wolves. I mean, in terms of transfers, there's a few options, I guess, out there. You could be covering another English Manchester City player in John Stones, who played the last game. Another potential rotation risk for you, though. Kieran Trippier, who scored a worldie of a free kick, like he did against Croatia in the World Cup. But obviously, like you mentioned, Spurs have a trickier fixture against United. So, you know, a couple of options out there perhaps for transfers as well.
Yeah, exactly. We'll let you know how that goes. And I'll obviously post it on Twitter as well for everybody's thoughts as that develops. Okay, let's take a break there, Nick, and move on to the questions.
Who got the assist?
So we're back, and I guess the first thing to talk about in our community section is our tie-in with FPL this season, which is a really exciting opportunity for the podcast.
We were more than happy to take part. I mean, it's just one of those things that we've been playing FPL for a long time, and obviously, you know, texting about it for years and years, you know, spent time on forums, so in most recent times spent time on Twitter. So obviously we're proud to have been noticed, I suppose, for doing an okay job in some way, shape or form. Just to note for anyone who's wondering, we're not being paid, and we are kind of giving our views just as part of kind of a representation of the community. It's a really great opportunity, and we're obviously really thankful and really grateful to have been recognised.
We're thrilled to be involved with FPL and the Premier League. So, yeah, look out for us. You can find our comments on the Scout part of the website normally two times a week, but we'll see. You know, depends on the article. But, yeah, watch out for it. It's an exciting opportunity. So we'll move on to the Who Got the Assist Mini League. If you haven't joined already, our league code is 516-441. And it's still refreshing, so we don't have a proper update for you for now. But looking at the sort of the top of the league, there's some really high scores that are worth mentioning. Jonathan Cargo Bisgard scored 110 points with his barely fantasy team. We've had 111 from Gary Cocker, Didi or Deschamps. And Andrew McKinnon also scored 105 points with being on Arnautovic. But at the moment, and I don't want to say for certain because it's still refreshing, that the top of the league looks like it might be Lazaros Kalatizidis with Drink Team. And he scored 121 points, which is absolutely mental. A brilliant score. And that's after scoring 98 points in game week one as well. So he's doing really well. It'll be very interesting to see what his overall rank is because he scored his game week one rank was 19516. And at the moment, it's saying his game week two rank is 10552. So who's in his team, you might wonder? He obviously captained Aguero for 40 points. He's also got Arnautovic 8 points. He's got Salah, 9 points. Richarlison, 9 points. Mkhitaryan, 12 points. Mane, 10 points. He's also got Bilva, your man, 2-pointer. He's got Mendy, 8 points. Steve Cook, 14 points.
Oh, my God.
Robertson, 7 points. And Fabianski for a 2-pointer in goal. So that's a ridiculous score. Very well done.
Absolute dreamland, that, isn't it? When you get every single one of your players almost returning. Let's move on to the questions, then. We've got a few this week, and a few of them about a very familiar theme after watching the performance this evening of Mo Salah. Obviously, didn't score, was for on goal twice, didn't quite make it. And it was Mane who was able to convert, and a few people have kind of written in about him. I think probably the first place to start with is the question that Aaron, Tom Bartley, and a few other people have asked about Mo. No Salah, but I feel like we ask this every game week almost. But should we even keep Mo with the tough fixtures that are coming up after game week 3?
I think it's definitely worth keeping. You're talking about a player who's just got 8 points in game week 1 and 9 points in game week 2. Obviously, he's 13 million, but any other player, you'd be thrilled with that sort of return, and you'll be looking at a player that everyone will be trying to draft in and fit into their squad. So, yeah, definitely. For me, he's a season keeper, and I'll probably continue to captain him. Obviously, it'll be nice to see some more returns from him, perhaps double-figure returns. Nice to see more bonus points coming his way as well. And he is, to a certain extent, being outshone by his cheaper teammate in Sadio Mane, who, like I mentioned, picked up the 3 bonus points. But, you know, Liverpool, their fixtures aren't too bad. They've got Brighton up next at home. So that's a great fixture. Another potential captaincy. I probably will captain Salah again. So for me, I'm keeping him. I'm certainly not thinking about selling him, even if, the likes of Mane are knocking on the door of my team.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I could be very aggressive with my wild cards. But I'm not going to be. I think that having Salah just seems like a suicide to go without. If I have wildcarded to bring in Kun Aguero because 30% is kind of where I want to be, if I'm getting rid of a player who's owned by upwards of 50% of the game, then I think that I'm probably asking for it. So we're not going to be doing that. And you just mentioned Mane then. A couple of people have asked about FPL royalty, particularly asked about this, you know, who goes alongside Mo Salah if we want to kind of copy that Liverpool setup. Well, it's an interesting question, really, who sits alongside Mo Salah. I think one of the defenders is a pretty much a given at this point. If you look at it just from an overall ownership sort of level, a Liverpool clean sheet is really going to hurt you. If you don't own a Liverpool defender, that's kind of the way it is right now. Van Dijk, Robertson and Alexander-Arnold are all owned by over 15% of people. Feasibly 45% of the game plus has a Liverpool defender in situ. I think one of them is absolutely, you know, essential. Watching TAA tonight, he is worth every penny of that 5.0, but not worth 6.0. He hasn't been underpriced. You know, he's quite a defensive fullback in a lot of ways, was passing the ball backwards rather than kind of rampaging into the space. He's not that kind of player. What he is a tidy footballer, a young footballer who's going to make mistakes. And the crossing isn't fantastic. You're going to be looking kind of a random assist, maybe a random goal from a set play. But for 5.0, you get what you pay for. You know, with Van Dijk and Robertson, Van Dijk was just, you know, immense today. Very easily, you know, near the free bonus every game, I think. And if they can sort out how they do set plays, I think he could be on for a couple of goals, given what a monster he is. And Robertson, you know, very, very impressive, could have had an assist for Salah. Salah could have assisted him. So, I think kind of having one of them is key in kind of the four positions. We saw Firmino today looking a little bit out of sorts. And I think that, you know, in contrast, Sadio Mane started the season on fire, up to 9.7 already, owned by 30% of the game. And why not after 26 points in 2 games? Got Brighton up ahead next. And people who don't own Mane, including you, Nick, in the last game, were cursing themselves when he scored. And I think that's kind of indicative of the sort of player that he is. So if you're looking for a second Liverpool kind of attacker, I wouldn't look much further than the former Southampton man. What about you, Nick? What are your views on the Liverpool kind of counterpart to Salah?
Yeah, I think it's definitely worth covering the Liverpool defence. Obviously, I've got Robertson. He's been really good. He ended last season brilliantly, and he seems to have started this season brilliantly as well. He could have easily had an assist in this game as well. And, this season he's created 4 chances. You mentioned TAA as a prospect, picked up a couple of yellow cards so far. He's created 19 crosses, though, which is more than any other defender, but only actually 3 of those have been successful. So his creation, his chance creation stats aren't particularly impressive. And there's always a threat of Nathaniel Klein, who might, only play less than half the time. But, you know, I think TAA seems to have that nailed slot in terms of the right back slot at the moment. And then, of course, Van Dijk, your man Van Dijk, who's, he's an aerial threat, isn't he? And could easily get on the end of one of those corners. For me, though, I think Robertson, I prefer Robertson to Van Dijk. And I think Robertson seems to have be getting more bonus points and creating more chances. And so has a higher chance of attacking returns. And then obviously with Mane, he's a great pick to be alongside Salah if he can afford two Liverpool players. I think he seems to be ahead of the other players in his price bracket. The Manchester City midfielders don't seem to be really hitting their stride quite yet because of all the rotation that they're suffering. And then you've got likes Eriksen also in that price bracket, who's not looking too great. So perhaps Mane is the perfect complement to Salah in midfield.
Yeah, exactly. Not on penalties, it seems. If James Milner's on the pitch, we had a few questions. Is Salah still worth it, despite not being on penalties? Well, last season he took two and missed one. So he's got one of his 32 goals from penalties. That's nothing to worry about. But, Mane, I think a lot of people initially bought him thinking, he might be on pens. Doesn't appear to be the case if Milner's playing, but still has had a really magic start. Moving away from Liverpool then, I've got a couple more questions, Nick. The first one's on third strikers. FPL Ogre asked Ings, King, Callum Wilson, if you're looking for a third striker, who's the man to be buying and why?
Oh, the age-old question about first strikers. I thought you might throw Andre Gray's name into the hat as well after he managed to score this weekend. And also his counterpart, Troy Deeney, who and I think Jay Eggersdorf's a big fan of, and he managed to get a 12-point return from him this game week. I remember you famously bringing in Troy Deeney for Aguero one season and me thinking, what the hell are you doing? And that was the time when you had a bit more luck than you do now. And he got a big return and it paid off for you, actually, which is an interesting one. There's also another name I'd like to throw in the hat, and that's Alexander Mitrovic. Did really well for Fulham in the Championship last season. Already off the mark with a goal against Spurs. He looks pretty good in the World Cup as well for Serbia. And Fulham's fixtures, like I said, they've got a few decent games coming up, like the likes of Burnley and Brighton. Definitely one to keep an eye on. I quite like Ings, though. Ings, at his price bracket, 5.5, just frees up a little bit more cash, which allows you to invest in your defence or your midfield a little bit more as well. But yeah, Callum Wilson for Bournemouth as well, started really well. Definitely one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've covered off a lot of players there. I think Danny Ings is definitely the one. I mean, a few people have noted that he's only played just over 2 hours of the season. He's taken 9 shots so far. Scored one goal, but eight attempts in the box, and he looks a very kind of clever player, doesn't he? He looks like a sort of player who's good at linking the midfield to the attack as well. He's happy to drop deep, and I think he's the sort of guy who has multiple point streams, as we noted last week on our kind of little look at him. He looks like he's going to be able to kind of contribute goals and assists. And to be honest, it doesn't really matter who he plays for at 5.5. If he's a player with a record of scoring over 10 goals, if he is fit, playing for a fairly okay team in Southampton. I mean, the next kind of 7 fixtures up until game week 10 aren't that bad at all. They only played Liverpool and Chelsea, of top 6 teams last season. The rest of the fixtures are kind of fair to middling. But I mean, for 5.5, if you've got a player who's scoring, every 3 games, 2.5 games, I think that's more than decent. And I think that, yeah, if you're looking for a third striker, you want to be minimising the cost while kind of hoping for value for money. And Ings, being priced, as we said last week, as a Liverpool bench sitter, but now appears to be a starter for the Saints, seems to be the way to go. I don't really see past that. I mean, yeah, you got Mitrovic for a little bit more, but I think probably we're going to say Ings there, aren't we? The final question this week is DDG. Do we get rid of De Gea? Magic Darts has asked, do we sell due to the Mourinho meltdown? And I think this is kind of part of a wider question. I've seen a few people on Twitter, for example, FPL Amy saying, let's get rid of Man United altogether, I want it off. And, I agree as well. I've gotten rid of De Gea despite kind of my initial kind of thoughts on him. Just because it just looks like, I've seen this movie before. I know how it ends with Mourinho in the third season. Nick, what do you reckon for De Gea? I mean, he's still owned by 30% of people. I mean, obviously you didn't own him, but if you did own him, would you be looking at kind of getting rid this week or getting rid of him in the near future?
I think, to be honest, I argued this at the beginning of the season that, you know, De Gea, his underlying stats were pretty good this last couple of seasons, but his points per value compared to 4.5 million goalkeepers is not as high. You can free up £1.5 million and invest wisely elsewhere by getting in a 4.5 million defender goalkeeper. And the likes of Everidge are doing really well for Cardiff so far. He's already got 22 points, having somehow saved two penalties in his opening two Premier League games, which is, pretty obviously quite fluky. He's not going to keep that up. But I think, you know, there are quite a lot of decent options around that price. You got McCarthy at Southampton doing well, Hennessy at Crystal Palace, Foster at Watford as well. We've also got my man Patricio, who's done pretty terribly so far. Yeah. He's another 4.5 million goalkeeper. And, you know, I think for me, a goalkeeper position, you can set and forget it. Yeah, with a 4.5 million goalkeeper, he's going to get you plenty of saves if they play for a lower level club. Even if they don't keep a clean sheet. Even the likes of Heyman managed to somehow get nine saves in that Manchester City mauling. So, you know, there are a few options out there in terms of cheaper goalkeepers. And I don't think it's worth, especially in Manchester United's current form. And, their terrible performance against Cardiff is worth spending that sort of money on De Gea. But then if you are carding, yeah, fair enough, get rid of it. But I wouldn't necessarily waste a transfer unless you're desperate to get in the likes of Alonso, and the only way you seem to be able to fund it is by selling De Gea.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those. Your man Patricio is an interesting one, obviously indicative stats, but they conceded four goals and their XGC, their expected conceded goals, is only one. So they've conceded three more goals than you'd expect them to. So maybe there's a case to say they've been a little bit unlucky at Wolves, and maybe there's a case to say they're going to be doing a little bit better in the future. So maybe that will be a reason for you to keep hold.
Hopefully you'll actually be able to make some saves, because then that reflects badly on the goalkeeper as well, that XG, but... Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe he's just adjusting to life in the Premier League and adjusting to the new season, as we indeed all are. Right, there's a theme to every pod, Nick. And last week it was, of course, Kaizer Chiefs. Well done to Jono forwards getting in there and getting it first. There's a theme this week as well. So transfers and captains then. Obviously, I'm wildcarding. I'll be captaining Mo Salah. Christ knows what's going to happen to my team over the course of this week. But I'm probably, as I said earlier, going to be balancing hindsight and foresight, having Arsenal players as well as kind of covering a lot of the main bases. And hoping that there's a brighter tomorrow after a very, very poor beginning. What about you, Nick? What transfers are you making? You've already mentioned the Richarlison one, of course. You're making another one. And who are you captaining this week?
So I've got another free transfer. I'm weighing up what I do with it. If I, swap out Davis for the likes of Bellerin, or even take a -4 and get Alonso in. There's a few options out there. But at the moment... I haven't made a second transfer. Obviously, Jota's already left my team for Richarlison. I'm actually thinking of captaining Salah as well, like yourself. I'm a glutton for punishment. So if Aguero gets another hatty, I'm not going to be happy. But I think I prefer Salah against Brighton at home. I'm also actually tempted to play Hamer in goal.
Oh, God, no way.
He's got Cardiff at home ahead of Patricio, who's got Manchester City. I just don't think I'll be able to handle it. Patricio concedes six goals or something.
Surely not.
It's tempting. It's just for the lols, I think. I'm going to play Hamer. That's my team for this week.
Yeah, if you do play Hamer and other people follow, you're going to have to apologise a trillion times to them next week.
Probably, yeah.
All right, that's your lot for this week. We are Who Got The Assist. You can find us online at whogotassist.com. Find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL. Our league code is 516-441. That's for the main league. The Zombie League is now closed. Thank you, everybody who's involved. Please stick to the rules. If not, I'll get rid of you, or someone will rat you out, and then I'll get rid of you anyway. We'll be back in game week 3. But for now, we hope this assisted you, and we'll speak to you then.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
Bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.